What's going on out there, fight fans? As Dave Duenas, founder of Leaving the Ring Network and the host of Leaving the Ring. So what I got here for everybody is a new podcast. And basically what it is us gathering all the shows, because as you can see now, there's a numerous amount of different shows on the network. And I thought it'd be a little fun of do the recaps and highlights and sound bites of each particular show. Obviously, I'm going to be putting in some input of my opinion and some new news and note topics along with this show as well. But, don't really have a name for this yet. I'm still trying to figure out the name here. So if you guys can come up with a name of this new show, as of right now, the only thing I can come up with is highlights, recaps, and low blows. So, let's start reviewing what we got here. Obviously, on Monday nights, you got the next round with Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya. On Tuesday night, you have Felipe Leon in the square circle. On Wednesdays, yours truly, as always, Leaving the Ring with myself, Dave Duenas, and my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya, and a rotation of different co-hosts that join the show, like Lenny the Fight Smith, and as well as Felipe Leon. Then on every bi-weekly show here, the 2-minute round, which is an all dedicated female boxing show. Then on Friday nights, you got Full Court Press, NBA and NFL show with R-Dot and Fresh. And then occasionally you got Lenny the Fight Smith that does his own show, The Technical Draw, which is a one-on-one interview show. So we got a lot of stuff here happening on Leaving the Ring. So we figured, hey, you know what? I know everybody doesn't have a chance to sit down and go through all the podcasts. So I thought it'd be a little fun putting them all together. And like I said, do the recaps, highlights, sound bites of each individual show, as well as bring in my opinions. Dave Duenas here. So let's start walking through the show. Showtime has released their schedule, and just like on our show Leaving the Ring, we discussed it, and the next round obviously tapped into it and started talking a little bit about that schedule. Now, schedule's really good, we got some promising fights, but at the same time, it also leaves a lot of questions out there about the PBC. Is Showtime the crutch for them, seeing that they're having some financial problems that's been reported earlier this year? Even fight fans were calling in. But let's take a listen to hear what Steve Kim and Gabriel Montoya had to say about it on the next round.
Outside of Ruslan Provodnikov, which is being handled by Artie Palullo and Banner Promotions, but he is still Ruslan Provodnikov facing a fighter handled by Al Haymon. Yes, there is a pattern. And I think putting all of the aside about what you think of the overall schedule, seems to me like Showtime is providing a shelter financially for the PBC and Al Haymon for the time being. But overall, it's about the fights, even though they're not But again, This is a very packed schedule. In fact, there's a couple of dates, Gabe, where I believe NBC will have a show like Victor Ortiz against Andre Berto, something we talked about last week. In prime time, and then they'll be strongly encouraging you to flip over to Showtime. And April 16th, they have the NBC show featuring Chris Algieri and Errol Spence before Showtime goes on the air once again. Gabe, the two fights that I really like and are the most notable, in my opinion, are the two heavyweight fights. At number one, I think those are still two very important fights. They will change the landscape one way or the other of the heavyweight division. And most importantly, it keeps all of us in the United States from having to, listen on the radio.
Okay. I know you guys are going to say, you guys are always bagging on PBC. But listen, it's not just us. We're not the only ones that's taking notice that there's a lot of stuff happening in the house of the PBC network. You don't believe us? Let's just look back at Showtime last year. There was no fights there. But all of a sudden, when you start hearing that things are not so green in the PBC land, Showtime is brought into it. And just to prove that other folks are taking notice, Steve Kim's going to read off a couple of tweets there of questions that were asked to the next round.
As always, we start off with the president, Andrew V. Kennedy. He says, gentlemen, so is Showtime always the PBC's code red backup plan, or is Espinoza the blind squirrel that found an acorn? I think you can argue it's a little bit of both, right, Gabe?
Yeah, he's a useful pet, you know. He's going to be friendly to you, and he, at the same time, you know, they kind of starved him out at the end of last year, and you're kind of waiting, and what's going to happen to his job? What happened to all the fights that he was going to have? And now, boom, they pay him back this year.
I'm just a squirrel trying to get a nut in your world, bro. That's pretty much what it is for Steven Espinoza, a guy that's running Showtime Sports over there. It's kind of sad, but hey, you got to call it how you see it, right? Now, that was the only thing that we were talking about. I mean, let's start mentioning Top Rank here in HBO. They haven't had the greatest start of the new year for us boxing fans. And now the big announcement with Terrence Crawford only going to be available for pay-per-view, and left a lot of bad taste in a lot of mouths of fight fans. Let's take a listen to what folks had to say on the next round.
Hey, guys. It's Jake from Rochester.
Jake, what's going on?
Aram is saying that Terrence Crawford's next fight is going to be on pay-per-view. And it's he doesn't really name any specific guy, but he mentions Postal as a possible guy that – I mean, are we at a point where we're – I mean, he's trying to – and he's going to try to get some eyeballs with Gilberto Ramirez if he beats Arthur Abraham, I guess, add him to the undercard. But – I mean, we're at a point where we got to pay like $50 to see a fighter take a risk. I mean,
let me just say this: if that's true that a fight like Crawford Postal is on pay-per-view, that thing will bomb worse than Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
Strong words there, Steve. Now, that wasn't the only call that called in that wasn't too excited about hearing Terrence Crawford going over to pay-per-view. Let's hear another fight fan express their feelings about the big pay-per-view move with Crawford.
I don't mind having a lot of pay-per-views, but...
What, ringside Robbie? You don't mind having a lot of pay-per-views? Are you and Celestino Caballero in cahoots and moving all these kilos? I don't know, man. Anyways, let's get back to hear what you had to say.
I don't know if they're worth it. I mean, Miguel Cotto, James Kirkland, what'd you say, Crawford and Postal?
I'm just telling you right now, Crawford Postal is one of those fights as an HBO subscriber. If I don't get that, but I have to pay an extra $49.95, I'm wondering to myself, why do I have HBO?
Well, you're not the only one wondering that, Steve. I think a lot of us are wondering that. I think the big question would be, who does he step in there? Victor Postol is one of the guys that's being mentioned. We obviously talked about it on Leave the Ring, and we just couldn't seem to put the puzzle together of why it would be pay-per-view worthy. Take a listen. And you got to excuse the high pitch in the background. Unfortunately, Felipe is calling from Tijuana, and they don't have great reception, especially with the wall being built up and everything. So I hope you guys forgive us for this one.
I got to ask you guys this, man. Who does he go for pay-per-view? And how are they going to pull this off? And getting people to buy the pay-per-view so watch Crawford step into the ring. I just kind of find that a very hard sell to happen.
I think they're going to have to match him up with somebody that is going to be somewhat of a draw on pay-per-view. Obviously, they're saying that it's going to be in June, so it's not going to be the winner between Manny Pacquiao and Timothy Bradley, because that's going to be too soon. The name that I have heard mentioned was Victor Postol, the guy that beat Lucas Matisse back in October or November. But he just isn't a big enough name to match up with Terrence Crawford and sell tickets. I mean, sell pay-per-views. So, if anything, Top Rank has to put on the greatest undercard that's ever been put on pay-per-view to be able to sell this pay-per-view.
Well, whoever Top Rank decides to put Crawford in for his first pay-per-view match. Let's hope it's going to be something worthy. I think all fight fans, we're just tired of being duped or tired of just hoping that something is put together that's worth our hard-earned money. Because if there's one thing that we can all say is what Steve Kim always says on the next round. It's not
free!
Okay, Ringside Robbie asked a really good question. Because the fact that there's possibly going to be 3 to 4 pay-per-views on HBO, what's going to happen? Should we stay subscribed to the network since everything seems to be traveling pay-per-view? Let's hear what Steve Kim had to say to that question.
Is Peter Nelson going to put more boxing on pay-per-view and take boxing off of HBO, regular? I mean, do we need to keep our subscriptions at this point?
Well, I don't believe this is necessarily a Peter Nelson issue. I mean, if there's some reckless company like Roc Nation that wants to sign older veterans who don't want to take really tough fights and still pay them $10 to $15 million, I don't believe that should be HBO's job or impetus to subsidize that. At that point in time, that's on Roc Nation, not HBO.
Okay, your 30-minute and less news source is Flip Leon's In the Square Circle. Now, he was able to break some news that happened last week about 2 Latino fighters. Check it out.
Came out last week when I was out sick, but it's something to touch upon. Jorge El Travieso Arce, considered the first 4-time world champion in 4 divisions in Mexico, was actually caught up in a little bit of trouble at the end of February. Actually, it was February 27th when they had the fight between Leo Santa Cruz and Kiko Martinez at the Honda Center in Santa Ana, California. While here, allegedly, Travieso Arce was accused by a chambermaid at the hotel that he was staying of sexually assaulting her. He was arrested the next day on Sunday at dawn, and then he was released on March 1st after his brother Panchito Arce, Francisco Pachito Arce, also a former fighter, posted a $25,000 bail. Travieso has stated that he is innocent, that the truth will come out in the pre-trial hearings. But here in Mexico, there is a number of tabloid magazines who actually got an interview with the young lady who accused Travieso Arce, and she has produced the pair of pants that she was wearing, which have, according to her, some of the Jorge Travieso Arce's DNA, because as she claims, he forced her to perform oral sex. And some of his DNA landed on her pair of pants, and she says that she has those pair of pants, and she has produced them. So it's just a matter of time, I would suppose, where Travieso Arce would have to provide some DNA from his mouth, I hope, a swab or something, and then they could check it against what they found on those pair of pants, and then there we're going to have some answers. Not exactly stating that just because it matches, it does. It means that he actually did it. Could have been consensual, but that's what's going to have to be decided in court and see where it goes from there. So Travieso Arce here in the United States in a bit of trouble, but they did allow him to come back in Mexico as long as he agreed to go back to the court dates.
Okay, so let's just get this straight. She was keeping... She was keeping whatever he ejaculated on as a souvenir, and she decided to provide that for the lollipop kid. I think that he's holding up to his nickname, the lollipop kid. Let's just hope that let's hope for the best of the guy, and just let's just hope that he keeps his lollipop wrapped, right?
Man, another former fighter who is also in a bit of trouble at the end of last week, former bantamweight and super bantamweight champion of Panama, Celestino Caballero, was arrested with 10 kilos of cocaine in his trunk. By the looks of the report, it looks like they were staking him out. They probably knew that he was involved in some kind of illicit behavior, and they ended up pulling him over and finding the illicit packs of cocaine in his trunk. He was arrested. He admitted that they were his, and now he will be charged with some kind of distribution and or smuggling. He, at the time, was working for the WBA. The WBA is actually based out of Panama, and he was working at the office. Not exactly sure what were his duties, but he was working there, and the WBA has released a statement that as of right now, he's no longer connected with the WBA until they investigate this whole matter. So hopefully Celestino Caballero has some answers, but it doesn't look like he has much to say once he admitted that the kilos of cocaine were his.
So Celestino Caballero decided to play Scarface after his run in boxing. You know, that's something that's not going to take unnoticed in the boxing world. A lot of fight fans are going to catch that. And, of course, callers that called into the next round, they definitely caught it. And they definitely wanted to talk about it. So let's listen to one of the callers had to say and ask about Celestino Caballero getting caught with all the kilos.
Did you guys hear about the Celestino Caballero arrest?
Yeah, he was running kilos.
Yeah.
like 10 kilos. Wow.
Yeah.
Legend.
Was that guy broke when he finally retired?
I'll be honest. I'm not a CPA, but I'm assuming he wasn't saving a lot for his Roth IRA on a monthly basis.
Yeah, it sure doesn't seem like it with 10 kilos in your car. That's for damn sure. Yeah.
You would hope not, right? I mean, 10 kilos in your car, man. Oh, wow. You don't know if whether you want to call him the mule. Now, Felipe Leon announces who Abner Morris is going to face on the undercard of Sean Porter and Keith Thurman. Take a listen.
Abner Morris will not be facing his original opponent, Fernando Cochulito Montiel, but actually Jesus Cuellar for the WBA featherweight title. Keep in mind that Morris is coming off a loss in his last fight last August. He lost to Leo Santa Cruz, so now he is getting a shot at another featherweight title, this time the WBA. Even though he's coming off a loss, Montiel is pretty upset that he would not be facing Abner Morris, which would have been a good payday for him, and he has gone on record in Mexico stating that Abner Morris was scared of him. So perhaps if Abner Morris ends up winning the WBA featherweight title, he would take offense to what Montiel is saying and maybe defend that title against Fernando Montiel. So, you know, just put that in your pipe and smoke it.
I'm going to put it in my pipe and smoke it all right here, Felipe. But there's something else that we need to put in our pipe and smoke, because a lot of folks believe that Keith Thurman is not going to step in the ring with Sean Porter. And the next round are obviously skeptical about the wreck. So let's hear a little bit about what pipe they're smoking on the next round.
How about getting Sean Porter's father's thoughts on it? He seems to be very skeptical.
Right. You know? I mean, I don't know how many car wrecks you've been in, but I've been in five. And
five?
I can tell you about...
Jeez.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, dating back to age five.
Whoa. Since age five, bro, I don't think they issued a driver license at that age. And I think that's probably far one of the reasons why you're not driving. Maybe they have too many clouds of smoke, Gabriel. Anyways, let's listen a little bit more of the reason why you're not driving, or the fact that there may be a fakeness to Keith Thurman's neck injury.
I still haven't seen an airbag, and I still would like to. I still haven't seen I keep hammering that home, but at least Porter got some good work this weekend, right?
He got good work, and the audience got seasick. You're telling me with all that money you couldn't get two GoPro cameras, one of them more stationary and held by an actual cameraman? What to really say. There's actually a meme, Gabe, and I'll send it to you, of a deflated airbag, and it said, meanwhile, in the PBC, they have their own deflate gate. Tom Brady find that funny, Gabe.
Now, Chino Madonna has been spotted by the Twitter world as the overweight lover fighter to date. A lot of fight fans took notice of the pudginess that Chino is wearing around his waist and kind of made a bit of a frenzy in the square circle, kind of touched on the subject.
Marcos Maidana looking very healthy, north of 200 pounds in some recent photos that have come out of Argentina. And he will officially not retire, has not announced his retirement, but says he will return when he is ready, if he does return.
So we all know that Dunkin' Donuts is going to be in business as long as Chino Maidana stays out of boxing. But he's not the only Argentinian that's in the news. Lucas Matisse, who has an eye injury, may be not ever returning back to the ring. So there's a fat chance we're going to see Chino Maidana back in the ring before we see Lucas. Let's listen to what Steve Kidd and Gabe Montoya had to say about the machine not returning.
Gabe, Lucas Matisse, his eye, which was damaged against Victor Postol October 3rd, is still bothering him, and he is off May 7th, and the word is he may never come back. So again, when a fighter says, hey, my eye's kind of hurting, instead of giving him the scarlet letter, I think maybe in particularly in this case, maybe we should give these guys the benefit of the doubt.
All right, so when I decided to purchase tickets for March 27th, the Warriors versus the 76ers, I definitely forgot about Andre Ward stepping in with Sullivan Barrera. But I'm not the only guy out there in the Bay Area that completely forgot that Ward is a fighter. Take a listen.
Hey, I'm sad to say I'm going to have to resend the invitation to the tailgate at the Andre Ward fight, man. I can't even find anybody to go with me, man.
No!
Brutal.
Yeah. I mean, like,
Fernando, let me just tell you this, something I repeated, something that I said earlier today. My ticket broker friend stated to me via text, it's like they're trying to not sell tickets. That event is not selling well at all.
I can mention Sullivan Barrera is the guy that's going to step up next on March 27th. But here's my question, guys. I'm here in the Valley. I'm from Northern California. I'm from the Bay. But the one thing I've noticed, and this is something that's not new when it comes to an Andre Ward fight, the promotion isn't there. If you go back with the history of Andre Ward, when he signed the Square Ring, which was Roy Jones and Michael Jordan, right when he got out of the Olympics, became a gold medalist, he went on and moved on with those guys. He didn't move on and sign with a bigger promoter. He decided he wanted to do his own way, his own thing. He took that on, and he was getting on smaller venues. Then he left. He went on to Goose and Tudor, and guess what? He still proceeded to do those things until Showtime came up with this brilliant idea, which was the six-man tournament at 168. That's when he got some recognition. But as soon as that was said and done, he became the king at 168. He became the legitimate guy to clean out 168 division. He decided to move on from them. When he moved on from them, he kind of stayed very stale, and now he decided to sign it with Rockefeller. Guys, he hasn't done much. I mean, is he his worst marketing PR in history for himself? I mean, this is a guy that knows how to sabotage his own career. I don't get it, Felipe. How does a guy that has a gold medal, who's considered pound for pound one of the best in boxing right now, get no recognition, no publicity, no television, and no radio air to promote a fight that most of us would consider a very difficult fight for him to make as a comeback?
Now, not to be too harsh on Andre Ward, we did find one guy that was trying to get his brother-in-law to come out to Oakland to watch the fight. The problem was, though, he didn't know exactly where to stay. I guess you could say he's not from Oakland, because even the folks that live in Oakland would tell you, you don't stay in Oakland, you stay outside of Oakland. But let's hear what he has to say.
Hey, thanks. God, I think I'm the only guy that's going to be going to the Andre Ward fight. My brother, actually, he's coming out from Chicago to go see it. And
wow.
I'm actually looking, but I want to see. I think it's going to be a good fight. I think it's going to be a good
test. It's a good fight. Yes.
But, hey, promised I would ask. He's been bothering me for weeks. He's like, find out where everybody's going to be staying at. What hotel do you think they'll be staying at in Oakland? So, Gabe, what hotel should we be staying at for the Andre Ward fight?
That's one of the moments you would have to call it the Steve Kim moments, which is the
K2 press release announces 10 6,000 tickets have been sold to Gennady Golovkin, Dominic Wade. Gabe, I'll be honest. I thought if they got 8,000, they'd be happy. I thought this fight should have been at the StubHub Center, not the Forum.
Now, Tom Lawfer, visit one of our new podcasts, The 2-Minute Round, which is an all-dedicated female boxing show to the women of the sport. And Tom Lawfer came on and announced the ticket sales to Gennady Golovkin, as well as the two world champion fights that are going to be on the undercard. Take a listen to what Tom had to say.
Is there going to be a way that they're going to be able to watch these two female fights on April 23rd? Obviously not on TV, but maybe you're going to be streaming it on some kind of internet platform or anything like that?
Yeah, that's what we're working on right now. I definitely want to make those fights available to the boxing fans. As soon as we have those details as far as the link for the stream, we'll make that announcement of where the boxing fans can watch them. The best way to watch them is to come down to the Forum and watch them fight live, because it's going to be a great atmosphere. We sent out a release today. It's over 10,000 tickets sold for the Forum and fights. And, Sunisa Estrada, she fought last year on the Triple G show when he fought in the Forum. And, you know, she's popular in L.A. She sold a lot of tickets, and so it just made sense to do it again. But, as you mentioned from a while ago, we worked with Leila Ali. We did a couple of fights with her. She was on the Madison Square Garden show when Vladimir fought in New York, and then also in Berlin. And then Lucia Liker was one of the best female fighters ever. It's just unfortunate she never really got her, the spotlight that she deserved when she was injured. Going into that Christy Martin fight, but. I think it just adds a different dimension to when you have two great fighters like Gennady Golovkin and Roman Gonzalez, and then you add a different element of having the two female fights on the show. I think it just makes it a lot more interesting for the fans.
But really, today I was discussing this with my cousin, my brother. One of the main problems that I've been seeing with boxing recently, comparing it with MMA, which is something that, I don't watch the MMA, but I do see how they put on their cards and how the fighters fight, and people are just, fighting, and if they lose, they lose, and they continue on, and it's not a deal breaker if you lose, and you're not seeing all those guys that are just simply not popular enough to carry an event by themselves.
This is a point that I've made in the past, just recently on a soapbox. Gabe, and I don't know if you agree or disagree, the UFC does a better job of servicing its fans. That's what's important. Bottom line, it's really that simple.
The sport's always moving forward, and it's always looking to its next big card. And because it's a consolidated product, yeah, the fans are happier. The amount of good fights, it's highly concentrated for them. With us, it's spread out, and everybody's fighting over each other, and it's fractured. And it's hard to be a boxing fan and have that discussion with a casual, because it's too hard to explain your sport and why each fight's important and what's going on. So, yeah, they do a much better job.
Great article on the Mugabe. Great article, Steve. A few things that brings back and makes me a little melancholy on top of that, but then it makes me realize how fucked up boxing is today. You know what I mean? Because what I did, and it was so bizarre that it tied in. You know just how absolutely fucked up boxing is. I was thinking about those days, like, it was just, it was always, every 6 months, it was some great fight. In the 70s, it was the heavyweights, and in the 80s, came in the welterweights and the middleweights, and Hagler fought everybody. He fought the whole Marilis row.
Now, this is something that I've complained about numerous times. It's nothing new about the fact that MMA is starting to creep up really quick. Not MMA, UFC. They're putting up fights that are stacked, and it's definitely more intriguing to a point. And I said this a long time ago on Leaving the Ring. When you have boxing fans that are now talking about UFC fights that are coming up, we have a problem in our sport. A couple years back, we had Marvelous Marvin Hagler that kind of touched on and where the sport was going after his reign of being in the sport. Take a quick listen.
I think it's a lot that's in part. Because I remember when I fought on HBO, which I said, Hagler boxes on HBO. I think I was the first one to bring out HBO in the cable system. Another thing is that look at the money that these fighters are making today, too. I mean, guys like, you know, which Muhammad Ali, in a sense, that bring the money into the game of boxing, which we all think. But, you know, today, now these smaller weights, welterweights, lightweights, bantamweights, I mean, they're making big money. I mean, so you can probably understand the reason why that a lot of these fighters stay longer in the game. But like George Foreman, I was listening to him speak one day, and he was saying that boxing now has become a business. For me, boxing has always been fun. It's always been my educator. It's always been something that I always could learn.
He tweeted out the Sports Century on Marvin Hagler yesterday.
Yeah.
I was watching it, and that was before my time. They pretty much came across everybody agreeing that Sugar Ray basically waited until he saw a decline in Hagler.
After 30 years and plus, still people are talking about Sugar Ray Leonard and Marvin's Marvin Hagler. We had a chance to sit down with Marvin's Marvin Hagler and ask these questions that a lot of fight fans have wondered for some time. And one of them was obviously, did Leonard wait for him to get old? Hear what he had to say.
My opinion, I hung around the game for 1 year, and after I realized that this guy basically was waiting for me to get old.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah.
Now, we've conducted hundreds of interviews for the past 8 years while we've been live on the air. And it's something that we're going to revamp. We're going to bring back interviews that are lost in the archives that were really gems to Leaving the Ring. So keep your ears and eyes out for that new show that we're going to be bringing to all the listeners. But let's continue on here on Around the Ring. Now, Lou DiBella is no stranger to Leaving the Ring. He recently came on The Technical Draw with Lenny the Fight Smith. If you didn't have a chance to tune in and listen to that show, boy, you missed out on a train wreck. Anyways, Lou DiBella was asked by Lenny the Fight Smith, who he took a lot of offense to, when Lenny asked him, was he going to be subpoenaed in the case of Golden Boy and Top Rank suing the Heyman PBC network? And he said, very candidly, yes. But it's not him that's being sued. It's the company. His company, I'm sorry, not being sued. It's not him being subpoenaed. It's his company being subpoenaed. So we obviously, hearing the news that we already knew about, finally coming to fruition to the world, we had a touch on that on Leaving the Ring. And this is what we had to talk about.
Lou, like he mentioned, he made it very clear on The Technical Draw, is not a party. He's not being sued in either the Golden Boy or the Top Rank lawsuit. But
right.
when you have third parties that have information that are at least somewhat involved in what's going on in a case, or have information or documents that are relevant to the case, in order to get them involved, in order to bring them in to testify or to get information or documents from them, you generally will serve them with a subpoena. It doesn't mean that they did any wrong or did anything wrong necessarily. It just means that they have information. So yeah, on the show, Lou let me know that he has been subpoenaed. He wasn't a big fan of the question.
Has anyone subpoenaed you yet? I know they're in the middle of discovering a bunch of these cases, and subpoenas aren't privileged or anything. Have you been subpoenaed, or has your company been subpoenaed?
Yeah, I've been subpoenaed, and they can have whatever the fuck they want. I'm not going to allow someone and get stuff that has nothing to do with what the actions involve. But I have nothing to hide. I've done nothing at all wrong.
Top Rank is now trying to compel DiBella Entertainment to produce a bunch of stuff that they didn't produce pursuant to the subpoena. It's pretty par for the course in litigation. It's what happens when attorneys can't work it out informally You'll ask somebody, whether it's a party or whether it's a third party, non-party, outside person, to give you the information, give you the documents. They say they don't want to give you everything you're asking for.
Is this a tactical move to what? For what? To draw it out or to get around something? Explain that to me.
I'll put it in and make an analogy to like a car accident. You get into a car accident on a street. You get rear-ended. You get hurt bad. You try to recover against the guy that hurt you, the guy who caused the accident. There happens to be a Starbucks right in front of where the accident happened that has a video camera that shines on the street or that goes on the street. You subpoena Starbucks to get that camera footage because you want evidence showing
right.
what happened. Starbucks, on the other hand, isn't going to want to give you everything. Even though they didn't do anything wrong, they're still not going to want to give you everything. They'll probably come back and say, hey, I'll give you the footage for like the 2 minutes where the accident happened.
But so
like
who's
that.
Starbucks? Who's Starbucks in this situation, though? But so we can clarify this.
Ludabella is the Starbucks here.
Starbucks. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought that. All right. Uh-huh.
Yeah. The car that's getting rear-ended is Top Rank, and the car that's doing the rear-ending is ostensibly Al Heyman and the Heyman entity.
Which he's pretty much
my
been rear-ending a lot of these promoters and stuff. I mean, with his tactics, I think it's safe to say he's been doing a lot of rear-ending. So, go.
And just for shits and giggles, if you didn't listen to the Lenny the Fight Smith interview with Lou Dabilla, here are some of the highlights, and I say this loosely, highlights of the show. If you're easily offended, please log off now.
I know. I don't think either of those guys are on your website. But do you have either of those guys signed
no,
to any multi-fight deals?
Because I don't have a long-term promotional contract with either fight. So what? What's that have to do with anything?
No, I'm just asking. Thanks
for
answering.
Yeah. That's like go talk to a Russell Pelser or a Don Chargan or one of the old-time Hall of Fame promoters, and they'll tell you for a lot of the history of boxing, the majority of promoters didn't have contracts with the fighters they were. The shows they were promoting. They promoted shows. They promoted particular fights. So, it's not like what's being done now is reinventing, the wheel at all. The other thing that I think people don't really realize is a promoter, there's no indentured servitude in America. Slavery was outlawed a long, long time ago. So, my contracts with a fighter and literally almost every contract any promoter has with a fighter, you can't compel a fighter to fight anyone.
Are you paying the site fees for these as well?
Find out whether I'm doing more or less as a promoter than was done previously. I love all the criticisms that are being leveled at me, particularly by people that know nothing.
I'm not trying to level any criticism. I'm just trying to get information from you. I'm just trying to learn stuff.
I'm not going at you.
All right,
in a way, you're getting what you asked me to be doing. Interview, you're sort of getting what you pay for, which is like I'm going to say what I think, and I'm going to hating that's going on against these PBC efforts on free TV, or on basic cable, media outlets that haven't traditionally done boxing. Because if you think that the failure of any chance being taken to bring boxing to new fans and more eyeballs, if anyone who thinks the failure of that is good for an industry is a fucking idiot.
I think that's part of the interest, though. I mean, and you say what you want about us at Leaving the Ring and our relationship with PBC.
I don't know who the fuck you are, and I don't know what your agenda is, nor do I know what the agenda is of whoever it is you're doing the show for.
No, I mean, I don't have an agenda. I'd like to improve the sport.
I never alluded to your relationship with PBC because I don't even know what it is.
Stuff that's come out about Waddell and Reed and whatever. But if PBC runs out of money, PBC fails.
What stuff has come out? Some fucking moron took a thread on Reddit and acted like that was some great source.
These are like public filings, not public. These are shareholder filings. Are you making?
I don't think I have to defend myself against clowns that are out there spreading hatred and innuendo without really knowing what they're writing.
Let's talk a little bit more about Wilder.
Did you ask these questions to Golden Boy for years when they were promoting fighters on a fight-by-fight basis? Did you ask those questions to them?
I haven't interviewed Eric yet, so Eric Gomez or Oscar.
Come on, cut it out. Seriously. Keep it real.
Dude, this is my first show, man. Give me a break here.
By the way, my guess is you're not going to have all that many shows if you're going to talk about this kind of crap and instead of talking about the sport.
Okay. All right, I guess we got to let it up a little bit here for Lenny the Fight Smith. Let's just give him a round of applause, man. It was his first show. He's got another one coming up very, very soon with another one-on-one guest. And let's just hope it's not as bumpy as the first time he got on the road into doing his first podcast, man. But he did a great job. And Lou DiBella, got to give it up to him as well, man. Quite a character in the sport of boxing. He's got a divided set of fans. Some hate him and some love him. Here on Leaving the Ring, we love you, Lou. We still love you. Anyways, we're going to end the show pretty quick, but I want to do just two more things, add two little gossips that we've been watching and witnessing on Twitter. So here goes the first topic, and it's something that I guess you could relate it to when Steve Kim says,
that's interesting. That is interesting. That's all I'm going to say.
I don't know if anybody took notice right now with Julian Williams and Vance Monterosian going back and forth on Twitter. Now, here's two guys that just really kind of aired out their laundry on the Twitter feed. Now, is it interesting? Somewhat, yes. Why? Here's the thing, is that Monterosian is a guy that really likes to call out anybody he has a chance to attach his name to. Now, Williams is another guy that says he'll take on any oncomers, doesn't matter who it is, to get in the ring so that he can prove himself. Well, here's a situation where both guys are claiming that neither one of them wanted to fight. Now, it's become kind of a trend here on Twitter. You see fighters, and we saw a little earlier in the stage of Twitter when it was released in social media, fighters going back and forth, fighters calling themselves out, even fights being made because of a Twitter beef. Now, is it something now that we still want to see? Because what has been played out and what we saw from the Twitter beefs is that it doesn't hold up. We saw it with Issa Smith. We saw it with a couple of other guys. It just doesn't hold up to the bill in terms of being good fights. Now, does Williams have a good right in saying, no, I'll pass on it, or saying that, hey, we offered you it, but you didn't want to take it because you outpriced yourself? Does Monterosian stand a chance? Does he even earn the chance of fighting a Julian Williams? I'm not sure, but I tell you what, Monterosian has got in with some good guys there, and he has proven that he's willing to fight. Now, does he perform on fight night? That's another discussion to have. So I guess at the end of the day, what is the big question? Do we want to see both men step in the ring after the Twitter beef that we've saw, last week or so? I'm going to have to say yes. I'm interested. I'd like to see both of these guys. Just because, like I said, you have Julian Williams, J-Rock, who says, I will rock anybody that steps in the ring. And then you got Vance Monterosian, who says, I'll step in with anybody if they're willing to fight me. Let's see it happen. Forget about the pricing. Nobody cares about how much you guys are going to get paid. What we care about is how much leather is going to be thrown.
¿Quién es el más pendejo?
All right, this is really quick. I know a lot of you guys have already seen this happen. And it was, you know, something that a lot of folks, you know, they didn't take too kind to. The Adrian Broner, again, back in his, you know, he makes his own videos making billions. That's what he says and stuff. And he shows a disrespect for money. And it really pisses off a lot of folks. And if you haven't seen this, you got to go on Twitter. You got to go any type of social media like Facebook and stuff, and you're going to see the response and the comments about Adrian Broner. The problem. Now, the problem is Adrian Broner is trying to get back on top. The problem is that Adrian Broner is trying to be the elite fighter that most people thought he was going to be at one time or another. Instead, he has kept himself, he has marketed himself as the bad guy. Whether or not he's losing or winning, he has kept himself in the limelight for most people to talk about. Now, let's go back here. The first thing you want to think about is, where was he throwing this cash and money? If you haven't watched the video, you know, I'm going to ruin it for you, but you can go catch up with it. Or you can watch it while you're listening to me right now while I'm talking. So he's in Walmart. And he says, he turns to the camera because he's waiting for the cashier to hand him over his money for whatever he spent. And this is, remember guys, this is at Walmart. So he's waiting for the money. It gets handed to his hand. And he says, he must not know who I am, right? In so many words. And he throws the money up in the air and he walks off. Now,
Here's the thing. Folks are like, this guy doesn't respect money. I hope he gets knocked out again. I tend to find it a little bit funny because here, at the end of the day, the video ends when he's walking off. I just want to know, come on, let's be honest here. You know for a fact that after he throws the money, it's a gimmick. They all went back, picked it up off the ground, and put it back in his wallet or his pocket, wherever, if he has a man purse or whatever it is that he carries around with him when he has so much cash. Which, it's Walmart, people. Walmart. I mean, how much? There's a joke that I have with my kids is when I get paid, I said, I'm going to be a big spender for you guys today. And I take them to the 99-cent store, the dollar store. You know, Walmart is no further from that. What are you going to really buy in a Walmart? I mean, that's where people go to get their deals. That's where I go to get my deals, is at Walmart. So should we really be that upset about what Adrian Broner does? Or should we take it as what it is? Entertainment. He has a sense of humor. I think we should appreciate a bit of what he does in terms of entertainment. Like I said, the problem with Broner right now is getting back on top. It's really, really grasping the fact, or no, sorry, him grasping the fact there might be a chance it never is, or I mean, let me take that back. Grasping the fact that he may never be a top-level fighter. But he's established himself to make some good money as either an opponent or as a gimmick in which he has now portrayed himself to be on his video.